Philippians chapter 1, verse 21 for the text of our lesson. Philippians chapter 1, verse 21. The Apostle Paul says, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." That's Philippians chapter 1, verse 21. In the book of Philippians, the Apostle Paul tells us how we can have peace and joy regardless of things in life that might prevent most people from having any peace and joy. For most people, being content. Now, contentment is where you're satisfied with things as they are. To most people, contentment is just out of reach. If for a teenage girl, if I were just beautiful. For a teenage boy, if I were just a good athlete. For a young family, if only we had the money to pay our bills. And for us that are getting older now, if only my health were better. For some folks, it's no more than if only I had a good bass boat. But all kinds of things that are just people, they're just out of reach. If I just had this, I would have contentment. But they're never content. They never have peace and joy. The lack of problems is not the key to having peace and to having joy. This is going to be a series of lessons, by the way. And I want you to know that just because you don't have any problems will not give you peace and joy. And just because you have problems should not keep you from having peace and joy. And that really is what the book of Philippians is about, is how to have the peace that passes understanding and how to rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I will say rejoice. In other words, how to have peace and joy. The two things that most people really want. In John chapter 16, verse 33, Jesus said, "These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace." Now there's one of the two things that people, maybe you've not never stopped to think about this, but there's two things that all people really like to have. One is peace. Now I'm talking about peace of mind. And that's partially what Jesus was talking about, not entirely what Jesus was talking about here. Peace of mind is where that you're not just totally distracted and always worrying. But rather you're at peace. Your mind is content. Your mind is not always, well, what's going to happen tomorrow? What am I going to do about this? What am I going to do about that? And just tossing and turning and can't sleep at night. Now that's one of the things that everybody really wants to have is peace of mind. And then he says, "These things I've spoken to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation." Now, most of us are old enough, we already know that by experience. The world is a world of tribulation. Now, the word tribulation has to do with things that press down on us, things that weigh on us. When you just feel like you got the whole weight of the world on your shoulders, then that's tribulation. Those are things that it's not something you make up. That's things you really have in the world. The world gives us tribulation, even for people who are not Christians. The world gives tribulation. The Christians have some tribulations that people of the world don't have. The suffering that comes from following Christ, of sharing in His suffering. But in the world you will have tribulation. But Jesus says, "But be of good cheer." We would say, cheer up. You can have joy in all of this. I have overcome the world. Christ overcame the world. And in Him we can overcome the world. And we can have the cheer, the joy. The joy is the inner feeling that all is well. And if you can have, when you have tribulation, when things in the world are not going right, when you can have the feeling, of the true feeling inside your soul that all is well with me, and if you can have a peace of mind where you're not driven to distraction, you're not always worrying about this and worrying about that, then you have two things that are very precious and that everybody in the world would really love to have, and they are your legacy. They are your right. They are your heritage as Christians. But they're also what Christ commands us to have and what the Apostle Paul teaches us how to have. Now, if I had written to a bunch of folks in Africa and say, cheer up, it's going to be all right. Get over it. Just have peace of mind. And they could write back and say, Keith, you got it made in the shade. You live in a nice place where you're not oppressed by your government. You live in a beautiful place and you've got all these things. And look, we don't know where our next meal's coming from. And the government's oppressing us, and we just have all these problems. And then they will be right. I would say, what right do I have? And by the way, I've thought about this sometime when I write some of my African brethren preachers over there and try to cheer them up in their myriads of troubles. And I often think, what right do I have to write to try to cheer them up when I've got it? I do have it from the standpoint of most people of the world, you and I. Have it made in the shade. We just have it so easy compared to 99% of the people of the world. But Paul wasn't in those circumstances. Paul, when he wrote to the Philippians and told them to be of good cheer, when he wrote to them and told them how to have peace and joy, he was in bad circumstances. We'll talk more from an outward standpoint. We'll talk more about that later. But Paul had learned a wonderful, wonderful lesson that you and I need to learn. By the way, every so often, maybe you don't need it, but every so often I need to preach to myself the book of Philippians because I can get my thinking all out of kilter so easily. I want you to see what Paul had learned in Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 through 13, after he had thanked the Philippians for the fact that they had fellowship with him in his work of the gospel. In other words, they had sent him some money to help him in his work of preaching. And he says, "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am." And that includes the state of Arkansas, by the way. "I have learned in whatever state I am, therein to be content." Now, Paul was a preacher. Of course, he was an apostle of Christ. And he traveled all the time. And one thing you'll learn as if you travel as a preacher, that you get into all, and of course people that were military learn the same thing, you get into all kinds of situations. I have, and my wife also, has spent a week in a mansion that cost several million dollars. In a gated community, three stories with a gymnasium in the bottom. Now we stayed in that situation and said, "Wow, how did I ever get in this situation?" Preaching in Huntsville, Alabama. But I've also slept on the dirt floor of a mud hut in the bush of Zimbabwe that had been freshly plastered with cow dung. Now you try spending a night in that place. And by the way, I think I could say that I enjoyed both about equally. I enjoyed the mud hut in Zimbabwe because it was an adventure. And I certainly enjoyed the palatial mansion on a mountaintop overlooking Huntsville, Alabama. I don't know if that was an adventure, but it was, certainly was something to behold. But nonetheless, that's a part of preaching. You stay in all those different situations. And Paul did, but much, much more so than I've ever done. And so he says, "I don't speak in regard to need, for I've learned in whatever state I am, to be content. I know how to be abased and I know how to abound." Now, everybody knows how to abound. But learning to be abased, that's something different. Learning to take life's lumps everywhere and in all things. I've learned to both be full and to be hungry. Everybody knows how to be full. But learning how to be hungry and to be content, now that's something else. Both to abound and to suffer. Paul, how do you do that? "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." It's the strength that we get in Christ Jesus. And that's something we all need to learn. To be able to be content, to have peace and to have joy, regardless of life's circumstances. That's what we want to begin a study of today. Is how can we have peace and joy regardless of life's circumstances. And there's three keys. We're going to look at the three keys today, but there's one overall key. We can have peace and joy regardless of life's circumstances. Now, Paul was writing under the worst of circumstances. It's hard to imagine how he could have been in worse circumstances. Except when you get to 2 Timothy, he was in worse circumstances. But he was in really bad circumstances when he wrote the book of Philippians. Well, how do you know that, Keith? Well, he lets us know about his circumstances. First, he was in chains. Look what he said. And when I say chains, I mean he was shackled to a Roman soldier as his guard when he wrote the book of Philippians. Look at Philippians chapter 1, verses 12 through 14. Paul says, "But I want you to know, brethren, that the things which happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel." Before we go, Paul, what had happened to you? Well, you go back to when Paul had taken the gift from the Gentile brethren to the church in Jerusalem, but to cement the love between the Jewish Christians and the Gentile Christians, and some unbelieving Jews found him in the city with the Gentile, and they just jumped to the conclusion that he had taken that Gentile into the temple, and they went about a mob trying to kill him. He was rescued, of course, you remember this from the book of Acts, beginning in chapter 20. He was rescued by the Roman chief captain and taken to the guardhouse, and from then on he had been a prisoner up to the time he writes the book of Philippians. And several times the Jews had made an attempt on his life, and only by the grace of God was Paul still alive at the time. And so he's writing from chains in the Roman prison, actually in Caesar's household, where the Roman prison was in Rome. He's a prisoner in chains. Well, actually, at his own hired house, but he was in Rome as a prisoner. And it says, so that it's become evident. Well, look, before I go on, verse 12, Paul says, "But these things that have happened," now that's what happened to him. These things that, and by the way, including a shipwreck, you remember Acts chapter 27 on his way to Rome. These things that have happened have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. Have you ever heard somebody say after a long list of awful things happened to them, you know that those things really turned out for the good? And well, that's what had happened to Paul. They've actually turned out for the good. My being arrested, my being people trying to kill me, my having a shipwreck, me being chained to Roman soldiers, those things have turned out for the good, for the further. Well, Paul, how is that? So that it has become evident to the whole palace guard and to all the rest that my chains are in Christ. First of all, Paul was exonerated. Being there and speaking to those Roman guards whom he's chained, and I'll say more about that shortly, then everybody realized Paul's not a prisoner because he did anything wrong. Paul's a prisoner because he was preaching Christ, and that's the reason he's in chains. So the first place, Paul was exonerated. And everybody likes to be exonerated for people. Oh, you know, I was not a bad guy after all. Everybody likes to have that. And then, and verse 14, "And most of the brethren of the Lord, having become confident by my chains, are much more bold to speak the word of the Lord without fear." Paul had set an example in chains, still preaching the gospel, writing letters around to the churches. There, you remember the prison epistles of Paul? This is one of those prison epistles written while he was a prisoner in Rome. And apparently this example, this often has, you see the example of a Christian who is courageous or bears up under bad circumstances and still lives as a Christian, still does what the person ought to do. And this is a good example to us. And you say, well, in my good circumstances, how could I possibly fail to do what I ought to do when Paul's bearing up as a prisoner? And so it encouraged the brethren not to be afraid of being taken by the Romans, not to be afraid of being persecuted by the Jews, but to actually stand up and preach. And so it had actually accomplished good, his being a prisoner. And so he was in chains. But in these chains, he still had peace and joy. And how was that? Well, here's the key. Let me ask you something. When you think about this real seriously, examine your own heart, I'll examine mine. Do I view the Lord through my circumstances? Or do I view my circumstances through the Lord? If I'm in bad circumstances, do I let that cause me to say, how could God allow this to happen to me? If there's a God in heaven, how can He allow this to happen? Paul could have done that. Or do I look at the circumstances I'm in because I'm a Christian and say, now, how can I use this to glorify God? How can I use this to cause the cause of Christ to be spread and to be extended? Do I look at my circumstances through Christ? Or do I look at Christ through my circumstances? And that's a real key. Now, what were Paul's circumstances? First of all, let's see that Paul was indeed looking at his circumstances through Christ. Go right back to the time when he was in Philippi. This is in Acts chapter 16. He's writing the Philippian brethren. They had seen this in Paul. You remember what happened to Paul when he was in Philippi? This is in Acts chapter 16. After he had cast the evil spirit out of a woman who was possessed with an evil spirit, and her owners had Paul arrested, it says, then the multitude rose up. This is Acts 16, beginning of verse 22. The multitude rose up together against them, and the magistrates tore off their clothes and commanded them to be beaten with rods. And when they'd laid many stripes on them, they threw them into prison, commanding the jailer to keep them securely. Having received such a charge, you put them into the inner prison and fastened their feet in the stocks. Now stop right there. Don't read the next verse. What would you and I do? Now, I try to examine myself in the light of this passage from time to time. What would you and I do? Paul had just been preaching Christ, and he had just delivered a poor woman from an evil spirit. And what does he get as thanks? He gets beaten with Roman rods, thrown into the jail, and not just thrown into the jail, put down into the dungeon, and having his feet made fast in the stocks. Oh, woe is me. Poor me. If there's a God in heaven, how can he do? How can he allow that? Is that Paul's attitude? Is that Barnabas' attitude? What did they do? And at midnight, excuse me, not Barnabas, Silas. But at midnight, Paul and Silas were singing hymns to God and praying, and the prisoners were listening to them. You reckon that's a sound they'd never heard before in that jail? The sound of prayer, the sounds of hymns of praise to God. And by the way, the jailer was saved as the result. Now that had an impact, didn't it? We can have an impact when we learn to look at our circumstances through Christ instead of looking at Christ through our circumstances. And I love this when you come to Acts chapter... Now Paul is in Rome. And not too long after this, he's going to write the letter to the Philippians that we're reading from. And what happened to Paul in Rome? Acts 28 verse 16. Now when we came to Rome, the centurion delivered the prisoners to the captain of the guard. But Paul was permitted to dwell by himself with the soldier who guarded him. He was chained to a soldier. Excuse me, I got that wrong. A soldier was chained to him. What's the difference? I don't feel sorry for Paul. I might feel sorry for the soldier. He had to listen to Paul whether he wanted to or not. And Paul was going to teach him about the Lord as long as he'd listen. And guess what? They chained the guard, about every 4 hours. And somebody else got to listen to Paul. Paul was there all alone. And one soldier, the Praetorian Guard, those crack troops that were selected to be the personal guards to Caesar, that's the ones that were there. The Praetorian Guard, the Imperial Guard, one by one, they got to listen to Paul as he preached to them the gospel of Christ. Paul was looking at his circumstances through Christ. He wasn't looking at Christ through circumstances. And that turned out to be a great blessing because he says he dwelt 2 whole years in his own house and received all who came to him. No one was forbidding him, preaching the kingdom of God and teaching the things concerning the Lord Jesus Christ with all confidence. Nobody keeping him, nobody forbidding him to do so. So it became for him a great opportunity to preach the gospel to the imperial guard. Even in Caesar's household, people learned about Christ. And so, there's a key to all this. What's the key to having peace and joy when we're eerily in bad circumstances? Was Paul in bad circumstances? He was in chains. He was a prisoner. What's the key to having peace and joy in such circumstances? Philippians chapter 1. Now, I'd like for you to memorize this. This is not real hard. Philippians chapter 1, verse 21. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. We're going to come back to that verse next week. But just for now, just remember that verse. Philippians chapter 1, verse 21. That's one of the three great keys to having peace and joy, regardless of what life brings our way. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Well, there's a second thing that we can say about Paul's circumstances. Not only was he in chains, he was a prisoner, but he had lots of critics. You know, I can deal with critics if they're out in the world, but it really hurts me when my brethren are my critics, because I love my brethren. I want to get along with them, and I really care about what my brethren think of me. And when my brethren are running me down and saying what a stinker I am, that hurts. That's what was happening to Paul. Paul, a prisoner for Christ. And what was happening to him by some of the brethren? Look at Philippians 1:15-18. Some indeed preach Christ even from envy and strife, and some also from goodwill. You know, people, there's different motives in why men preach Christ. Some have a good motive, some have a bad motive, but they're preaching the truth. The former preach Christ from selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my chains. Some were jealous of Paul. They were envious of Paul because he was an apostle. And they just wanted to bring more affliction on Paul. So they were preaching Christ. They were preaching the truth. That's very important. They were preaching the truth, but from a bad motive. They were preaching Christ, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my chains. They were hoping that Paul would be persecuted even more. But the latter, out of love, knowing that I'm appointed for the defense of the gospel. What then? Now let's stop thinking before you read the next verse. What would you think about it? There are people that preach the truth, but they're just trying to get me hurt. They're just trying to have bad things happen to me. That's the only reason they're preaching the truth. What was Paul's attitude about that? What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached. And in this I rejoice, yes, and will rejoice. Paul, it didn't matter what happened to him. What mattered is Christ is preached. And as the result, people can be led to Christ. He was viewing his circumstances through Christ. He was not viewing Christ through his circumstances. So he had critics. These critics, you know, I've talked about the fact it's easy to endure what comes from unbelievers. Don't like it when the brethren do us that way. But these people had the wrong motive, but not the wrong message. They had the right message. Paul could not have rejoiced had they been preaching a false gospel, a false doctrine. In Galatians chapter 1, verses 6-9, it says, I marvel that you're turning away so soon from him who called you the grace of Christ to a different gospel, which is not another. There's some who trouble you, want to pervert the gospel of Christ. But even if we are an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. As we've said before, so say now again, if any man preaches any other gospel than what you have received, let him be accursed. So we cannot rejoice somebody preaches the gospel wrong, preaches the wrong message. But as long as they preach the right message, even though they may be doing this insincerely trying to bring harm to me, I rejoice that Christ is preached. And again, the key, Paul willingly sacrificed himself for Christ and the gospel. What was his attitude? Say it with me. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Now that's one of the three great keys to having peace and joy. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Finally, Paul was facing a crisis. He wasn't just in chains. He didn't just have critics. He had a real crisis, and it wasn't an imagined. You know, sometimes folks get all worked up and imagine a crisis, don't they? Not Paul. He faced a real crisis. Why was he in Rome? Was he there on vacation? Why was he there? What sent him to Rome? He appealed to Caesar. He was on trial for his life. And what if Caesar decided the wrong way? What was going to happen then? Paul would die. He faced the reality of a violent, painful death because he was preaching Christ. He faced a real crisis. He was there to be tried by Caesar. Look at what he says in Philippians 1:19-26. For I know that this will turn out for my deliverance. Now, by the way, by deliverance there, I don't believe he has in mind deliverance from the prison. I believe he has in mind deliverance from this present evil world, deliverance from sin. Through your prayer, they were praying, the Philippians were praying for him, and the supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ. He had Jesus, he had the Spirit. Now, he was inspired. We have the indwelling of the Spirit through the Word of God to strengthen us. and the supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ according to my earnest expectation and hope that nothing I should be ashamed. Paul did not want to bring shame on himself. That's what he didn't want to do. That was the thing he feared, not death. He feared bringing shame on himself and shame on the gospel. But with all boldness, he wanted to have the courage to preach Jesus even in chains, even in prison, even with the possibility of death as the result. He wanted to preach Christ with all boldness. And that's what we ought to want to do. Whatever ability and opportunity we have to see that people hear about Christ and see that we tell it to them boldly, not timidly. As always, so now also Christ will be magnified or glorified in my body, whether by life or by death. It really didn't matter to Paul, whether it was through his life or through his death, as long as Christ could be glorified in him. Now, how do you have that attitude? Say it with me, please. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I live only the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor. Yet what I shall choose, I cannot. So if I can live, then I can labor and have fruit for Christ. But I don't know which one I really prefer. Now, Paul wasn't contemplating suicide. That's not the point. But rather, he didn't know which one he would really prefer to have. If he stays on in the flesh, then he can bear fruit for Christ. But what would death bring? For I'm hard-pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. Only the Christian can face death and say, you know, this is really what I would prefer because I can depart and I can be with Christ. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. But he realized that the brethren needed him and he wanted to stay to serve them. And being confident of this, I know that I shall remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy of faith, that your rejoicing for me may be more abundant in Jesus Christ by my coming to you again. He wanted to go back to Philippi and preach to them again. And in that hope, he was confident that he would be delivered from prison. But that really wasn't his emotional desire. His emotional desire was to depart and to be with the Lord. Now, how can anybody face the fact that, you know, I may die? I may be staring death in the face. And how can I have peace and joy if I'm staring death right in the face? Well, there's just one way. Only the Christian can do that. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. So, look at what Paul faced. Crisis. The possibility of death. The Christian can accept this because death for the Christian is a positive. What's the worst crisis you ever faced in your life? Isn't it the death? Isn't that the worst? Most people would say, oh, death. If the doctor says to me, this is terminal, we cannot do anything for you, it's just a matter of time and not very long at that, would that be the greatest crisis that most people think they could face? Well, here Paul is facing that crisis, the crisis of the reality of death. And Paul says, for I'm hard-pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. But what's the key again? The key is, for to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. All right. Paul was writing under the worst possible circumstances, it seems. He was writing in chains. He was writing while people were being critical of him, his brethren criticizing him. And he was writing while he faced a real crisis in life. The very possibility that he would die as the result of his testimony. But Paul had peace and he had joy. He had learned whatever circumstances he was in to there and be content. One more time and the lesson is yours. How did he have that peace and that joy? For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Now what should you take out of this lesson? For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. There may be somebody in the audience this morning who needs